From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, after Hurricane Sandy devastates New York City, Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state needs to address long-term weather concerns. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts on the politics of storms, and we'll take you to one county in northern New York struggling to keep its budget under the tax cap. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo took a helicopter tour of areas devastated from Hurricane Sandy this week, along with New York's Senators Schumer and Gillibrand. He says the state faces significant challenges to rebuild and will have to fundamentally rethink New York City's infrastructure going forward. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Cuomo organized a helicopter tour of locations particularly hurt by Sandy, including Breezy Point, where a massive fire destroyed over 100 homes, Long Beach, Long Island, where the beach has eroded completely away and houses are flooded. Afterward, Cuomo, who visited disaster sites when he was HUD secretary under President Bill Clinton, says he's never seen New York like this.
It is very disturbing and sad and troubling to see the amount of damage done and the lives that have been disrupted all across the region. And we talk about Breezy Point, which is just breathtaking to see Breezy Point or Fire Island or Long Beach. But what you also get is it's everywhere. It's everywhere, you know. And homes that have been flooded, people without power, just being without power for a prolonged period of time is highly disruptive.
Senator Chuck Schumer says he's confident that federal money and assistance from FEMA is coming.
It's one of the biggest disasters to have ever struck this state and even this country. The federal response has to measure that scope.
MTA Chair Joe Lota says public transportation is slowly coming back to life. He says some subway lines will be open, buses are being ramped up to full service, and commuter lines, Metro North and the Long Island Railroad, are opening on a limited basis. And he says workers are still trying to get the water out of numerous tunnels with the help of a special federal unwatering team.
We're going switch by switch, signal by signal, power substation by power substation, and making sure that everything is up and running. What we're bringing back today and tomorrow, there'll be more on Friday, and then there'll be even more on Saturday. Our goal is to every day get this service back to normal, back to the situation that we were used to last week, and if not, even better.
Governor Cuomo says the state and city will have to build back better in anticipation of what he says is likely more coastal storm flooding in the future. He says he'll be convening meetings on how to do that shortly. The governor, who stated already that he believes extreme weather occurrences are here to stay, skirted the line on what's become a political controversy over global warming.
Climate change is a controversial subject, right? People will debate whether or not there is climate change, whether or not it's a cycle, whether it's global warming. That's a whole political debate that I don't want to get into. I want to talk about the frequency of extreme weather situations, which is not political. The frequency of extreme weather situations is way up.
But Senator Schumer was not reluctant to jump right in.
I think there are a group of people in Washington right now who just deny the truth. And there is, in my judgment anyway, a relationship between all these once-in-a-lifetime storms that we experience every couple of years and what's going on in the atmosphere. And the best way to deal with that, and the least costly in the long run, is to grab the bull by the horns and actually do things that prevent the climate from changing and global warming from occurring.
Schumer, along with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, also delved deeper into the politics in Washington, where some Republican conservatives have proposed cutting FEMA and other government disaster aid programs.
When you have those in Washington who are arguing a cuts-only approach, cutting money for FEMA, cutting money for disaster relief, cutting money for these families that desperately need our help today, that's the wrong set of priorities.
After the briefing, Cuomo was back in the helicopter for another tour of more devastated regions, including Jones Beach, where the sand has now disappeared. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartuck. Quite a week, Alan, after the impact of Hurricane Sandy devastated New York City, New Jersey, the Atlantic seaboard. And the politics are not free from a disaster like this. Let's just talk about politicians first and how Governor Cuomo, of course, we see Chris Christie, President Obama, and an election coming.
Yeah, the election is just days away. And this, of course, has changed everything. You know, David, a good deal of the way in which we perceive our politicians is based on likability. We're not a nation of political scientists. We don't say in Massachusetts, if you vote for Elizabeth Warren, the Democrats may take the Senate, or if you vote for Scott Brown, the Republicans will take the Senate. So we don't think that way. We think, do we like somebody? Elizabeth Warren has a terrific record in Massachusetts, for example, and in the United States, and has come up with a Consumer Protection Bureau and done all this, a Harvard professor and the rest of it. But this election will be won or lost on whether enough people like her or like Scott Brown. Massachusetts has never elected a woman to the United States Senate. It's extraordinary, just extraordinary, and misogynistic, to say the least. So now we take the president of the United States. He gets off a helicopter with Chris Christie. And Chris Christie almost has tears in his eyes and says, you know, the idea that his parents' son has been on Marine One is, and he gets off. And the first thing that happens is he hugs a woman and he says to her, don't worry, we're going to take care of you. Well, you know, I don't know how anybody could not be touched by that. And here is Chris Christie, who's the governor of Massachusetts, who's asking for a great deal of help, which he should, from the federal government. And Obama is giving it to him. And Chris Christie cannot say enough good things about him. There are people who are saying, oh, he's doing that because if Romney loses, he'll be the next up and he won't have to wait 8 years. He can wait 4 years. You know, I've thought about it. I dismiss it. I'll be honest with you. I don't think it's realistic. I think he's doing it because he's the governor of his state, because he really gives a damn, and that's it. And he's doing what he thinks he has to. Well, let me tell you, when a man of Chris Christie's stature, who has often been raised as the potential presidential candidate on the Republican side, puts his arm around Obama and says, you know, basically, he's a great guy and he's doing good work. And it has to change some minds. We're not talking about every mind in America. There'll still be people who stick to whatever they were going to do anyway. But this is a very close election, and something like that can really swing it. So, yes, it's political, all right.
And what about the election and voting? You have 1.9 million people still without power as we speak on Thursday, assuming some of those are restored by next Tuesday, or many of them even. You're still going to have people who are dealing with a devastated life situation who may not be as motivated and might not be able to get out and vote.
Well, yes, David, I think you're right about that. And we do know one thing. We know that it takes more motivation to get a Democrat to vote than a Republican. And we suspect that the reason for that is people tend to protect their assets. If you have more, you're more apt to vote. That's why Republicans come out in greater numbers than Democrats do. Don't argue with me. It's just the way it is. We know this for a fact. So if you're screaming at the radio, stop it. Now, just so you'll know, that, of course, hurts the Democrats, because obviously this is an intervening variable, as we say. Nobody expected it. On the other hand, think about this. People, great presidents, Abraham Lincoln, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, George Washington, have always been, you know, seen as great presidents because they had great trauma before them. A civil war, a second world war, and a depression for Roosevelt, a civil war for Lincoln, of course, and Washington, the father of the country in the American Revolution. This now represents one of those political upheavals, or human upheavals is a better word, and gives Obama a chance to really show his stuff, which he has not really had because of the incredible opposition of the Mitch McConnells and the other Republicans in the Senate who have decided not to give him an inch. In a time like this, everybody's hearts go out to those who are affected, and everybody tries to help. That's it. I think it's going to make a huge difference.
Finally, Alan, Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt, who was reporting just before you came on, has spent some time with the governor as he's gone on his tour surveying the damage. And the one thing that the governor keeps talking about, and he's pushing aside global warming and any of the politics surrounding it, he's saying it's a fact that extreme weather events are coming more frequently. The oceans are rising, and we need to create an infrastructure to deal with it.
Well, if most people are to be believed that they see Andrew Cuomo as running for president, I certainly do, then he's going to need some signature things for his campaign. And among Democrats, especially if there's any kind of primary or the rest of it, there is a general feeling that there is global warming. We have seen it from the scientists, and it may well be that we're just getting a spate of tough storms. But we do know, and he says so, and he's right, the ice caps are melting and the sea is getting higher. And this is exactly the kind of thing that Al Gore and his friends have predicted all along. So it's a very good signature issue for a governor to be laying out early in the campaign, and it will help him.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New Yorkers affected by Hurricane Sandy are trying to resume normal lives despite grim projections of power and mass transit outages lasting several more days. Subway tracks and commuter tunnels beneath New York City sustained heavy damage, and Metro North Railroad services were suspended for several days. Utilities have crews out repairing damaged and downed transmission lines. Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has this report.
New York City bore the brunt of the storm, but damage has been reported for miles up the Hudson Valley. There have been numerous power and telephone outages, all of which are being addressed by utility crews. Both NYSEG and Orange and Rockland are cautioning customers that power restoration efforts will be lengthy. American Red Cross of the Mid-Hudson Valley Executive Director Darrell Lafferty.
We're going to be sending volunteers down to assist as may be appropriate with the response further south, which certainly did have quite a bit of devastation.
Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino warns there's still a lot of danger out there.
We're asking people to stay off the roads, to stay in your homes. If you have to go out, please use extreme caution. There are trees and power lines down everywhere. Of course, these power lines, some of which are live. We have flooded areas, although not extensive flooding, but there is pooling water. So conditions remain very, very hazardous.
Astorino says Westchester will easily qualify for federal disaster assistance. County Park sustained serious damage, including Playland in Rye. Central Hudson spokesman John Masurgian explained Sandy's impact was eclipsed by previous storms in his company's service area.
This storm, although severe, was not as bad as last year's October snowstorm, which affected about 156,000 of our customers, or Hurricane Irene, which affected about 180,000 of our customers. Or back in February 2010, what we dubbed the Twin Peaks storm, the heavy snowfall that impacted all of our customers, about 290,000 customers. At peak, this storm affected about 82,000 customers, but we're estimating about 93,000 customers were affected in total. So it's still ranked as a major storm. Fortunately, not as bad as the previous storms we've had over the last 2 years.
Ulster County Executive Mike Hine credits last year's brush with Hurricane Irene in helping prepare for Sandy.
Even though the Hurricane Irene response was fantastic, there's always room for improvement. And what we did was create an emergency operations center that brought together not only the first responders, but also brought together health and human service personnel to ensure that when we opened up shelters and got people out of harm's way, that we simultaneously got them the kind of nursing care and other assistance that they needed.
MTA workers have their marching orders. The New York City bus fleet, 6,200 subway trains, 600 miles of tracks, and 468 subway stations will have to be inspected and certified operational. New York City officials say fully restored public transportation is days away.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Turning away from storm-related news, a northern New York county is struggling to keep its budget under the tax cap, while a neighboring county is reporting sales tax revenues that will help them stay under the cap. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
Essex County officials are considering a local law to override the state-mandated 2% tax cap. Town of Moriah Supervisor Tom Scazzafava says they would have to hold two votes to actually block the cap.
You have to have this local law in place if you do override. If the county board votes on this local law for the override, they still have to vote again to do the override. So this is just voting on the law to allow it. There'll be two votes in this process. I talked to the county manager late last week, and we're coming up with a three-year plan. I have not had the opportunity to sit down and review the final numbers with him. But to meet the 2% cap, if you don't do anything with that county budget and just consider the impact from the retirement system, you're over the 2%. So on the increase in our retirement contribution. So realistically, I think that unless we make some drastic major cuts and cut out a lot of programs that are not mandated, because that's really the only areas where you have the choices, I think you will be increased more than at 2%.
Scazzafava says most of the county budget is mandated, and he's critical of opponents to the override. Town of Willsboro Supervisor Ed Hatch says he voted for the override last year, but he doesn't feel the budget has been adequately scrutinized, and therefore the cap should be kept.
We're putting the cart before the horse. I feel that we should do the full budget. We should be completely satisfied that we've done our best to hold the tax in line. The other thing that concerns me is that I think that we are spending way too much money in the county and taking it away from our towns. We struggle with our budgets. We use our fund balances to stop the increase, and yet the increase is coming in the county tax. Last year, I cut my budget back. I use my sales tax money to reduce my tax for the county. I have all kinds of problems in my community. I have a water problem. I have a sewer problem. I don't want to cut my road improvement programs back. And yet I stand on the county and watch my tax rate go up. And I try to work in my town to reduce it so that the all-over taxes of the town don't go up. The county board should take a real look at how we can hold the line on spending.
While Essex County struggles with its tax cap, to the north, Clinton County is reporting that sales tax revenues are above projections, thanks to an influx of Canadian and other shoppers. Clinton County Legislature Finance Committee Chair Sarah Rowden says that's likely to keep the 2013 budget under the tax cap.
When we project the sales tax revenue, we try to be conservative, or I like to call it careful, that we don't overextend ourselves or overproject. But I think what it means is that with the sales tax revenue, we can provide the services that we want to provide at the county level, hopefully without raising our tax levy by much, if at all. So I think sales tax revenue is just critical. And Clinton County is very, very fortunate to be in the position we're in, because most counties are not experiencing an increase in their sales tax revenues.
Rowden said more Canadians and Vermonters are visiting the county and increasing the tax revenues.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. One upstate company is poised for its big break. A few months ago, UltraScan announced technology for reading fingerprints that's up to 100 times more accurate than current methods. As Daniel Robison reports, the company thinks their invention will fundamentally change how we identify ourselves and pay for purchases.
Right now, fingerprint technology is not accurate enough to be the only way we identify ourselves. But if John Schneider has his way, it soon will be. Essentially, tiny cameras take fingerprints these days, which also pick up on the filth of our fingers, distorting the image. Schneider's company, UltraScan, uses an ultrasound, which folks usually associate with imaging a pregnant woman.
Where ultrasound can go through the skin, the muscle, the tissue, the fat to see the baby inside, we can go through the dirt, greases, and grimes found on the finger to always give a good fingerprint image. As a result, our accuracy is 10 to 100 times greater than any fingerprint scanner on the market.
UltraScan has tried for decades, gone through millions of venture capital, and just emerged with its product in August. They're the first in the world to demonstrate that this technology works, something the FBI certified this summer.
We take a lot of pride in knowing the fact that we did something that nobody else could do around the world, and they've tried for 3 decades. No one's done it.
Now, UltraScan is in demand, with Fortune 500 companies angling to add the chips to smartphones, laptops, and eventually at cash registers. For InnovationTrail.org, I'm Daniel Robison.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at InnovationTrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1244. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.